So we spoke earlier about groundfish and how the fishery is managed with a system called catch shares, which kind of divvies up the fishing quota between individuals in a sector based on their fishing history. And John Quinn, you're the chairman of the New England Fishery Management Council. So looking at the ground fishing industry more broadly, are catch shares still the right way to manage the fishery?
I think generally, no, because of the complexity of the multi-species permit. I mean, there's 15 species within it, and it's very, very complex. A lot of these catch share systems are single species in other parts of the country, so it's far more complex. But you got to remember the context in which it was put into place back in 2010, when under the Days at Sea approach, with the stocks down and the assessments down, a single vessel with the days at sea that they would have been allocated could not survive. So it was really a creature of the times that you had to figure out somehow to keep these vessels fishing. And that was, I'm a little bit nervous because Professor Georgiana was my fisheries economics professor, so I think he's going to grade me here. So that was where the catch shares approach came into place of combining the quota and stacking quota on particular boats. So that's the genesis of it. Again, it's a complex fishery, multi-species by its very name, and it's probably not the best fit.
Do you have an opinion of what would be the best fit?
The best fit would be that we figure out how to grow the pie through assessments and bycatch and a whole host of other ways in order to allow a fishing vessel to be profitable. We're not at that stage, not even close to that stage, but in the ideal world, we grow the pie and allow fishing boats individually to fish and bring product to port.
And Laura Foley Ramsden, owner of Foley Fish, you were on the management council for 3 years, from 2011 to 2014. And I was just interested in your opinion, if you think catch shares are still the right way to manage fisheries.
So I never felt that catch shares were the right way to manage fisheries. And I was on the council for 3 years, and we would talk in the breaks and say, what if we walked in today and said, how do we catch fish, instead of being always so restrictive? And the management was always so conservative and always fearing lawsuits and threats from outside groups, that we never said, gosh, we're not doing a good job with this part of the mandate from Magnuson-Stevens, which says maximize yield or optimize yield for the fishermen for the greater good of the country. And we are so lucky to live this close to the most incredible ecosystem that yields truly the sweetest, firmest scallops and the largest flake of cod, and you know, monkfish and hake and redfish and pollock are all right here. And yet, because we have this management system that really doesn't work for a multi-species fishing effort, we're not getting that fish to port. And, you know, over 90% of the fish in the U.S. is imported because people can't get access to the redfish and the pollock and the hake and the cod and the haddock that are right there. And like I said before, we are underfishing them. We've only caught 13% of what we're allowed to catch. That's not a successful management program. Not, you know, for the fishermen, not for the processors, but most of all, not for the American people that are being denied this incredible, fresh, healthy resource. And I found that really frustrating. I know your follow-up question is going to be, what should we be doing? I'm not an expert in fishery management. I just know that this is not working, because we are, as I travel, we have customers all across the country, and even in Hartford, Connecticut, they don't have local New England fish on their menus. And that's so frustrating, because we have this really, really wonderful healthy protein that we should be putting out across the United States in a sustainable way, you know, in accordance with annual catch limits that take into account what the proper yield should be. But if we're only pulling 13% of that catch limit out of the ocean, then our management system is failing.
So why are we only pulling 13%? Is it like an assessment problem on like the scientists' end on how we're assessing the population? Like, what's the issue there?
Well, it's a variety of things. You have things like because you have to set catch limits in account for all of the stocks, if you overfish windowpane flounder, a non-commercial stock, then that can shut down another fishery. If you have an assessment that says there aren't a lot of yellowtail out and the scallopers are need to go into areas where there are yellowtail, if they're getting close to the limit, then they can't fish in that area anymore. So you have these choke stocks that are limiting the efforts against other stocks. There are a variety of reasons that all come together that inhibit the catch, closures, things like that, that certainly inhibit the maximizing the yield.
And I wanted to kind of shift from talking about groundfish to scallops. And I know that these two fisheries kind of have completely different management stories. In the scallop industry, scientists and fishermen, they've been able to kind of develop a lot of trust between the two of them, working together to protect the scallop stock. So economist Dan Georgiana, I was wondering, how were they able to do that when it's such a different story for ground fishing?
Well, scallops, or the scallop management system, is at least partially catch shares. That is, scallop vessels are assigned a quantity of scallops to catch per trip in certain areas. So scallops are at least in part, in larger part, a catch share system. The difference, as Laura said, it's a single species fishery. The law, which I think is well written, is carefully written, and I think our system is an interesting system. But the law calls for regulation by fishery, and what we have instead is regulation by species. So in groundfish, there's something like 15 or 16 species, and there's 21 or something like that stocks, because in some cases there's more than one stock per species. And it's managed as if each species was a fishery. So you have quotas for each of the 21 or 22, whatever it is, species stock, species and species by stock area. And it's the system is really unwieldy. I think, and it's also scallops are easier to assess, I think, in terms of their population, because they more or less stay put. They do move around. Kevin Stokesbury and his system of video surveying and the other systems of assessing stock of scallops has worked pretty well. And scallopers, in a lot of ways, has been a great success in New Bedford. There's no question about it. And the success, I think, is certainly due to the species itself, and I think it's also due to management. I think that's true. In groundfish, there are two things that are going on. One is there's a sector management system, which is somewhat experimental, and there's also the quotas by species, which is really a problem. As Laura said, you have fishermen these days spend as much time avoiding species as catching species, because even though there's lots of fish of a certain species, there's small amounts of the other species, so they have to worry about catching them, and they have to worry about the system assigning a catch to them, because they probably would have caught that much and they discarded it. So there's a whole system by species, which I think is a problem. And it's certainly possible, and there's some movement in NOAA to look at species, groups of species, and have quotas for groups of species, and I think that's pretty hopeful. But any time there's a situation where things are getting worse in human affairs, we have a tendency to turn at each other. That's just the way we are. How we've survived this long is beyond me. But we have a tendency to do that, and that's certainly going on in the ground fisheries. So, for example, the scallop fishery sets aside a certain amount of catch for research. The ground fishery really cannot do that because of the shrinking quotas. The scallop fishery has organizations, the Fishery Survival Fund, which is a lobbying arm of the scallop fishery, which lobbies and works with NOAA, as well as lobbies for changes. The groundfish fishery doesn't have that. The groundfish fishery, the vessels in the groundfish fishery are just hoping to survive till the next trip. It's a very, very difficult system, both because of the catch there system based on species and because of the way the quotas are set.
Can I just add, do you mind if I add something?
Mm-hmm. Laura Foley Ramsden, owner of Foley Fish.
So when I was on the council, I served on both the groundfish committee and the scallop committee, and it was markedly different, the attitudes of the fishermen. And the scallop committee, there was a lot more cooperative research. So they would come in and they bought into the science completely, and it would reflect what they were seeing on the ocean, and they were incredible stewards of their resource. They would come to us and say, wow, that open access area that we thought was going to be teeming with scallops is not, and we're doing too many tows through there to not get as many scallops as we should be. Can you shut down this particular area, and instead can we focus on this one, and then can we work out how to negotiate it with people who haven't taken trips yet? And it was all very civil at the table. In groundfish, what the models that were coming out of the Science Center weren't agreeing at all with what the fishermen were seeing. And so there was this whole disconnect and disbelief in the science. And the lack of incorporation of cooperative research on the groundfish side, which I think is changing, but at the time I was in the council, there was the Bigelow does what the Bigelow does, and we all need to abide by the Bigelow. And part of the problem was that they were doing surveys, and then they were putting it into models that also used landings. And the fishermen were saying, well, we're not landing as much because you're telling us we can't land as much, and now you're telling us that that's a reflection of how many fish are in the ocean, so your model is flawed because it has artificially low input. So there was real distrust and disbelief from the ground fishermen, because not only was it not what they were seeing in the ocean, but they knew it to be artificially suppressed what was going into the models. So I just wanted to add that discrepancy in buy-in to the science and the lack of partnership in cooperative research that really, I think, hindered the sense of agreement with the groundfish and the fishery managers.
And you mentioned Bigelow. What is that?
Oh, don't get me started on the Bigelow. So the Bigelow is a big government project. It's a big ship in Woods Hole. I think it actually was broken this fall, so they weren't able to do fall surveys. But it's a boat that does the survey samples year after year. And if you get groundfish people at the microphone, they will talk to you about how the nets aren't flown correctly to catch certain fish. And there's a lot of disagreement about what the Bigelow, their samples show versus what the groundfish, if they were to tow right behind the Bigelow, they would actually get starkly different results. So there's a lot of distrust and lack of belief in the results that come from the vessel.
And John Quinn, chairman of the New England Fishery Management Council.
Just to expand on what Dan and Laura said, there's really two things regarding the scallop industry that make it different. One is the research set-aside program, which off the top of the scallop trips, there's some $15 million a year of money put back into research. SMAST is a big player in that. Division of Marine Fisheries is a big player. Other academic institutions. With that $15 million a year, they do collaborative research with the industry. It's human nature. If you're involved in an experiment or activity and you see how the methodology is, that you take the sample, even if the outcome isn't what you hoped it was, it's more believable. So I can't emphasize enough that we have to have more collaborative research on the groundfish side, just like we have on the scallop side.
And are there any lessons from the scallop industry that could translate over to other fisheries, like the groundfish fishery?
Yeah, those two things, I mean, collaboration and resources are critically important to have successful assessments, and the confidence that you need for the fishermen to go out knowing somewhat agreement with the assessment.
And John, some people in the scallop fishery say that they're concerned that catch shares will be introduced, and I was wondering how likely that would be to happen and what would be the pros and cons of doing that.
Sure. To dovetail off of what Dr. Georgiana said, there's, you know, they have, I call them closed area trips, whatever the name is. There is some quota-based fishing on the scallop side. But I hope it doesn't happen on the scallop side, the catch there, and I'll give you a little background. The scallop industry in New Bedford is the envy of the nation. It is viewed across the nation and in some parts of the world as the industry. Collaboration, resource, sustainability, infrastructure, which I hope we talk about, the New Bedford infrastructure is second to none. So my view is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. As I said in my comments about catch shares, individual groundfish boats could not survive on their quota or their days at sea. Scallop boats can certainly survive and then some on the days at sea or on the quota that they've given. So it's a totally different animal. There's a proposal now that's been put forward by the Harvesters Association, a concept of catch shares to be brought into the into the scallop industry. It would go through the process. Certainly, it's entitled to be heard, go through the process. But I got to tell you, we're talking about the Port of New Bedford here. Many of these owners are in New Jersey and Virginia and the Carolinas. So I firmly believe the catch shares comes to scallops, there's going to be a giant sucking sound off of the waterfront in New Bedford. So very, very important that we be very careful with that. It sounds good, some of the concepts, but this is about the Port of New Bedford, this forum. So I'd beware if the next scallop capital of the world is Cape May, New Jersey, or Virginia. That could very well happen if catch shares comes to scallop industry.
And economist Dan Georgiana, what does New Bedford have to do to strengthen its fishing industries going forward?
Well, I think the problem of the multi-species or groundfish fishery has to be solved. I mean, there two things happened at once. One was there's a change in the law in terms of how quotas were set, and the other was the catch share system. And that really has to be repaired. There's no question about it. Part of that, from our point of view, is to allow Sector 9 to at least trade quota so we can get the unused quota out into the fishery as well as make our sector whole in terms of what we owe because of misreported catch. I think that's a central problem. And if you look at the shoreside businesses, we've done a couple of studies of the shoreside businesses in New Bedford. John is right that New Bedford is the only is a full service port. It's a great port for lots of different reasons. It has full service in terms of serving the vessels. It has full service in terms of processing fish and so on. But the groundfish fishery is a large part of that. It's certainly a larger part of that than the landings would show. I mean, groundfish, by its nature, it's a year-long fishery. It sustains a lot of the shoreside businesses. The fishery sustains the shoreside businesses and allows them to look for other business. So now you see a lot of New Bedford is a center of 100-foot steel boats, and a lot of yachts come into New Bedford and whale-watching boats and all sorts of other activities go on in the port because fishing gives the shoreside businesses a base of support. And if we start losing that base of support, I'm not sure it's going to be possible to continue the sort of scope of the New Bedford shoreside businesses. I think we have to fix the groundfish fishery. And I think the central problem is management by species, which I don't think is what the law intended. There is no such thing as a southern New England yellowtail fishery. It's a ground fishery. They land all sorts of species together. And I think we have to think about that. And there are groups within NOAA who are thinking about that and thinking about how can we have quotas for groups of groundfish rather than a quota for every single species by stock.
And Cassie Canastra, Marketing Director of New Bedford's Electronic Seafood Auction, what about diversifying the fleet? What new markets or different kinds of catch might be explored?
Well, off of what you said, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Why would I look to other markets when we have a plentiful groundfish fishery? And you've touched on this already. We should be utilizing it, not landing that only 13% doesn't really make much sense, especially when a large portion of that quota is haddock. We're not landing haddock because of choke species, and our markets are being flooded by Canadian haddock and imports. I mean, most of the haddock that you're eating in the U.S. is from Norway, from Canada. It's all imported species, and most of America is not even educated on that. So I think it's about strengthening our groundfish fisheries and marketing Massachusetts seafood, stuff that's being landed in the Port of New Bedford and Gloucester. I think that's how you strengthen. I don't think we should be looking really for other species. I know people talk about dogfish, but why would you look at dogfish when haddock is just as plentiful and can be used for things like fish and chips and other dishes that are on menus across the U.S.?
And I wanted to open this next question to kind of anybody on the panel that feels that they would like to answer it. Scallops are extremely valuable for the Port of New Bedford, and the port has been like diversifying different kind of business opportunities, such as kind of investing in like offshore wind energy and things of that nature. But some critics have said that there isn't enough urgency on the port's end to try to diversify those business opportunities. And I was wondering, with scallops being so valuable now and kind of focusing a lot on them now, is it risky to kind of not be thinking ahead of, well, is it possible that scallops won't be this sustainable in the future? Is it risky to not have that urgency that some critics say that the Port of New Bedford officials don't have? Dan Georgiana, sure. Economist, UMass Dartmouth.
Yeah, I think it is risky. Fish stocks are very uncertain. In the mid-90s, the scallop catch was down for various reasons, but partly because areas were closed to fishing. At the same time, there was basically a fear that haddock was going to become extinct. Now there is an awful lot of haddock in George's Bank. And if you look at the comparison between the U.S. and Canada, Canada is able to increase their haddock catch almost immediately because they have a different management system. Right? They have a management system that's by government department, and they almost immediately are able to increase the haddock catch. It's been much more difficult for us to do that. And forgive me, but I forgot the question. Could you repeat it again?
Oh, is it risky to...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's you don't really know what's going to happen in the ocean. I mean, it's a friend of mine, a famous biologist named Ray Hilborn, says that doing trawls in the ocean to assess the stock is like dragging a net through the trees to figure out what's on the ground in a jungle. And that's pretty much, it's very, very difficult to estimate stocks. I always thought, I'll tell a story, I'm sorry to do that, but... we have a professor named Pingo He, and he sort of gave this example that if a bunch of researchers went to a beach on a sunny day and they counted the number of people on the beach, and then they went to the beach on a cloudy day and they counted the number of people on the beach, you can't assume that the people that are missing died. And that's sort of how stock assessment, that's an over... Forgive me, I'm an economist, not a biologist, and I argue with biologists. I'm the only economist at SMAST. I argue with biologists all the time. But that's sort of what goes on. It's not really that simple to figure out how many of whatever there are in the ocean. In the management system, which I think is a democratic system and a bureaucratic system, or a bureaucratic system and a democratic system, takes a very long time to react to perceived changes. And that's also a problem. So I was just looking at statistics, and there's lots of Jonah crab coming into the port these days. And Jonah crab are a species of crab. I don't think it's ever been assessed. I don't know what's going on. Nobody really knows. I don't think that's my take on it. But people are catching a lot of Jonah crab. And so there's always this sort of trying to catch up. The science is trying to catch up with the reality of fishing, and the reality of fishing is always dealing with science from the past. So we don't know what's going to happen in a few years. I think scallops, luckily, have cooperated with the fishery. They may not continue to cooperate with the fishery. We don't know. I mean, any area survives by diversity of employers or diversity of types of firms. And I'm concerned about a port that lands, that's value is 90% of one species. And I think the shoreside businesses are scrambling to figure out how they fit into that. I think it's a risky situation.
You do look at the history of this port, obviously, with whaling and textiles, as John added the textiles, so I'll give him credit. Certainly, you don't want history to repeat itself, sort of the boom and bust. So having a diverse set of offerings would be preferable to just being dependent on scallops for the port.